From the Financial Times in London, I'm Ravi Mathew, and this is FT News. Travis Kalanick is out. The driving force behind transportation app Uber has resigned after months of scandals and growing investor pressure on the company co-founder and chief executive. Joining me to discuss the latest events at the world's most highly valued startup is Andrew Hill, the FT's management editor. Andrew, you've written about Uber's rotten culture and what was required to stop it. Will Mr. Kalanick's departure stop it?
Well, I think the question really is how far did the rot get? And clearly in a company that's grown very fast and has taken on the characteristics of its hard-charging founder, there'll be a lot of people who were taking their lead from the chief executive and founder. It's a classic case of a startup. And there the tone is very much set from the top. So just taking him out does not, I think, necessarily deal with the underlying problem of the culture and behaviour that for which he is responsible, ultimately because he was chief executive, but more importantly, responsible because he was setting the tone of the company as a whole. And then, you know, there's a second question, of course, which is he's not entirely gone. You know, he is on the board, he is a major shareholder, and therefore he remains an important influence over what happens to Uber next.
There are two schools of thought. One is that his removal as chief executive will make it easier to recruit the multitude of senior positions that are vacant. Another, though, is that if he's still on the board, that will cast a very long shadow over anyone else who comes in to run the company. I mean, what's your view about that idea of the founder, who's so totemic for an organization, becoming a board member and still therefore remaining a very strong voice at the company?
Well, I suppose the difficulty here is that it's a private company. It hasn't gone to list yet. Lots of people thought that when or if it gets to be an IPO candidate, that Kalanick would not be the person who needed to run it, so that this might have been an inevitable step at some point in the future. What's very difficult to tell is whether the board has the sufficient power to rein in Kalanick. It's taken a long time when you think of the building controversies and ending in scandal and investigation and so on. It's taken a long time to take this step. And that, to me, indicates that this was a board obviously dominated by investor pressure, which until relatively recently was weighing up the huge value that he'd created at this company against the risk of losing him or the risk of keeping him. So I think in some cases, it's not a conventional board structure of the type you'd find at a listed company, where you'd say there will be independent directors who can signal in different ways what they think of the chief executive, who essentially serves at their pleasure. In this case, you can't deny that a large part of the success of Uber is also down to Kalanick. So I think an open question really about whether, having taken this critical step, they follow through to try to curb his influence in future.
It's interesting, that founder dynamic, because Bill Gurley, who's a famed venture capitalist in the Valley and a big investor in Uber and is on the board, had tweeted even today to the effect that lots will be written about Mr. Kalanick, but there are few entrepreneurs who've changed the world or created technology that has as much as he has. And there's an interesting management question here, though, as well. In the tech world, the founder, chief executive, is feted and so instrumental to the nature of a company. But inevitably, as companies become bigger, the role of being a scrappy, boundary-pushing founder is very different than when you're running a big company as a CEO. Is this a case of a company growing very quickly and struggling to manage that growth?
I think it is that. I think the speed with which Uber has grown has put a lot of strain on the company itself. But it has also probably mean that they have shortcut some of the things that even startups with slower growth trajectories end up imposing. I talked to an entrepreneur last week who vowed at an early point in the growth of his company that it would never have an HR department. And then he eventually conceded that actually you probably do need an HR department when you can't interview all 60 or 100 people that are working for you. And I think Uber grew very quickly in that respect without some of the natural curbs that would be put in place even at other quite fast-growing companies. That's one element of it. I mean, I think another element of it is that when you've got a company that is trying to do the things that Uber was doing, which require, as countless profiles and interviews with Kalanick have shown, a what he calls principled confrontation attitude, where you're going to take on the establishment, then in a way you need somebody like Kalanick to be the sort of tip of the spear leading that charge. And so you've got another way in which it becomes difficult to dispense with him because he is the person who's leading from the front.
Let's compare this to some other bigger companies, particularly ones where they have a long tradition of developing leaders internally, because one of the challenges, again, with a founder-led company is it's so bound up in the personality and leadership skills of that founder that often that next generation of leaders is hard to develop. Apple is an interesting company because, of course, Tim Cook had been a longtime employee of the company who took over from Steve Jobs, Satya Nadella at Microsoft and elsewhere. You've written a lot about other organizations such as GE, which have very established ways of thinking about the next generation of leadership. How does that fit versus this kind of organization? Where do those companies excel? And what does this tell us about the nature of how companies develop their leaders?
Well, I guess one thing you can obviously say is that a company like General Electric, that coincidentally named its next chief executive last week at the same point that that Travis Kalanick said he was going to go on indefinite leave, has had 125 years to develop this very careful and meticulous system of leadership training and development. And the 8 years or so that Uber has had is barely enough to cultivate a next generation, let alone a whole pipeline. So there's that aspect. But I think it was striking to me that in the report that was done looking into the problems at Uber, the report very clearly pointed out that one of the things that they had to put in place was mandatory leadership training, and including some pretty basic things like how to effectively set organizational goals, which you would think was a 101 leadership training. There's clearly something been missing. And again, the scale and size of Uber over a short period means that they haven't been able to do those types of things that GE, Unilever, other big multinationals do as a matter of course.
So they're obviously two different aspects of this. On the one hand, startups, which are led by founders, on the other, big organizations, which are very embedded with this process. What can one learn from the other? What can a startup that scales very quickly, what might it learn from a big established organization, big organizations that consistently develop over time, leaders after leaders after leaders?
Well, I think one thing that they can learn very clearly is that there is some value in developing internal succession. And you could argue that in the latter stages of Steve Jobs' tenure at Apple, by developing Tim Cook as a successor, he recognized that, despite the sort of turbulence of his earlier career. I think there's also some interesting things that GE and others might learn from Uber and startups, because what's intriguing there is that they are themselves saying, recognizing that they need to have leaders who are a bit more flexible, agile is the word, resilience is another buzzword in that area. The kind of people who can adapt very quickly to changing circumstances, which is, of course, something that we expect of startups and entrepreneurs in Silicon Valley and elsewhere.
On that note, I think it's going to be very interesting to see what kind of leaders we get next at Uber. There's a whole raft of vacancies, and it will certainly be interesting to watch and see who follows in the very big shoes of Travis Kalanick. Andrew Hill, thank you very much.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has experienced teams who can craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex. Real wealth requires real solutions. Connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com.
Did you know the Capital Ideas podcast now has a new monthly edition hosted by Capital Group CEO Mike Gitlin? Through the words and experiences of investment professionals, you'll discover who was their best mentor, what's a mistake they made that changed their approach, and how do they find their next great idea? Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. Published by American Funds Distributors, Inc.